Welcome to Monologues by Hassie, where I'm going to be dropping unsolicited brain dumps from the depths of my grey matter. I'll talk about life, money, society, and self-development, plus whatever else lies up there, whilst hopefully not getting cancelled in the process. Last month, I spent $1,276 Australian plus one day of my precious annual leave on a commercial contracts course for non-lawyers taught at a prominent law firm in Australia called Clayton Utz, and it was taught by a man called Tony Dean, who's a litigator. And when I got to the course, his argument for him being a litigator rather than somebody who, I guess, specializes in the back-end side of contracts in terms of writing contracts is, he said as a litigator, he can understand where contracts go wrong and what mistakes people make. And that's the perspective that this course is really taught to us from. Now, when I was coming up with how to present this particular podcast, I struggled a lot. I spent 8 hours at this course. The format was an eight-hour course. And there was just so much information in such a short period of time. I've really struggled and procrastinated with trying to distill this into a podcast. I mean, with all of that said, those 8 hours were absolutely incredible. As somebody who's not a lawyer and who's never done a law subject at university, I really enjoyed being kind of outside my normal area of the normal domain of kind of science and technology, which is what I'm normally comfortable with. And this was very left field for me. And I enjoyed it. It is almost what I would imagine being a law student is like, except instead of having a few lectures spread out throughout the day, you just have this one gigantic 8 hour lecture, of course, with the lunch break and whatnot. But you have this one 8 hour lecture where you just learn about one subject of the law. And of course, there's only so much that one can be taught in 8 hours, but remember, when you start from ground zero, that can be quite valuable. So with that said, I've decided to structure this particular podcast as a Q&A. So let's get into it. Question one, why on earth would a software engineer, let alone anyone who doesn't work with contracts, why would they go to a contract law for non-lawyers course? And here's the kind of very cryptic quote I thought of. It's, those who don't understand contracts will be leveraged by those who do. And I think this is 100% true. No matter where you are in the world, there will be some legal system. And generally, if you're in a country where there's not too much interference and you do have a rule of law and there is law and order, the understanding of contracts is so important. The people who understand contracts and who can, if they do not know how to understand contracts, if they can afford to pay other people who can understand contracts, that is where you concentrate leverage. These are the people who will make better decisions in an economy, in a society. And sometimes the concentration of that knowledge can be deemed as unfair. Now, beyond that quote, which was, again, very kind of cryptic, not sure how deep it is, if I look at everything that I might do in my life, I am going to be going through some form of a contract, be it marriage, employment contracts, procurement, whether I start a business, deals, negotiations. Contracts are such a crucial part of life. And everyone, even if you're the type of person thinking, oh, well, I've never actually had to, contracts doesn't really affect me. Chances are you're probably working for somebody and you signed an employment contract and maybe you didn't pay it too much attention and maybe you should pay it a bit more attention, right? Is your lack of understanding of contracts being leveraged by those who do understand those contracts? Now, question two is, what were the key takeaways? One of the things I've really enjoyed about this course, again, I came as somebody who, I have definitely read contracts before, like I've read my employment contracts before, but It's just like reading text. I don't understand the legal basis behind it. So coming to this particular course, it was very interesting to understand aspects of contracts, but also it kind of touched in aspects of negotiations, because before you typically engage in a contract, there is negotiation. If you're getting married, before you get married, there's a negotiation. Likewise for a job, for starting a business with somebody, right? For buying and selling products, there is going to be a negotiation phase. So typically the phases of where we analyze what happens with the contract, we start with an offer. What do we want? And then that offer can be accepted or rejected. If it's accepted, great. What's the consideration? A consideration in legal speak is something of value. So something of value needs to be exchanged. And then the next thing we want to look at is what is the legal capacity of the people and or the corporations or the bodies that are involved. So I learned this particular topic, legal capacity, I found quite interesting. I think from individuals, we're talking, if somebody's a minor, then they, at least in Australia, they can't, you know, entering into contracts with minors, boom, whoosh, throw it out the window. Likewise, anybody who's mentally incapacitated, if they're in a prison, these, you know, they don't have the legal capacity to enter into a contract. If you look at corporations, it's also important. Who has legal, you know, what types of corporate structures have, you know, different legal capacities? One of the interesting things I learned when we were kind of going through different types of corporations, there was a bit about trusts, which I found very interesting. Tony did a great job of explaining at a very high level how a trust works. There was also something that, again, might not be relevant to everyone, but I found this rather relevant, and this was news to me, but I've made a previous episode on how I almost bought a house, a unit, and I still plan on buying a unit or an apartment. And generally, these unit and apartment complexes have a homeowners corporation. That's what they call them in the United States. In Australia, it's called a strata body. Now, a strata is a type of legal entity. And the interesting thing I learned about a strata corporation is that if a strata corporation has debts, then the owners of that strata corporation are personally legally liable for those debts. So I found that very interesting and, you know, definitely a bit jarring. I'm not sure if it's going to necessarily turn me off from buying a property that is in strata, but it is another risk that I'm aware of. So I'm very grateful for that. In contrast to this, the role of a trust, I guess, is to protect your assets from something like that, from being sued, from somebody litigating against you. You create a trust and you have beneficiaries. So it's a form of asset protection. And in terms of legal capacity, it was really, when we're looking at individuals, when we're looking at different types of corporate structures, governments, non-government entities, who has the legal capacity to enter into a contract? And then finally, consent. The other kind of broad areas where jurisdiction is incredibly important. You know, within Australia, there will be certain types of laws which will apply in New South Wales, but won't apply in Queensland and Victoria. So if you're planning on conducting business nationally, that's very important. And I think no matter where in the world you are, this is likely going to be the case. If you're in India and you plan on doing a business in multiple states, or, you know, the United States or the UK, depending on where you are in these countries, every sub-jurisdiction is going to have slightly different rules. In Australia, we have federal government, state government, and local government. So there's going to be different rules and laws that each level of government has, and they're going to be different as you kind of work in different jurisdictions. So it's something to keep in mind. And then contract terms, right? So with the terms of a contract, they can actually be voided if the term is unfair. And here's the big caveat. A term has to be unfair and it has to be a standard form contract. So what is a standard form contract? A standard form contract is, I guess, legal boilerplate, which you can probably find online. And it's a contract that is, as is mentioned in the name, standard form. It's generic. So if a generic contract's gone across to somebody and there are unfair terms, those unfair terms can be eliminated. However, if the contract isn't a standard form contract, then that's no longer a problem. So the very interesting advice that Tony was giving, and of course, this isn't the context of imagine if you're a business and you're engaging in either you're trying to procure something or you're engaging with selling something and you're negotiating a contract with the other party. You generally want to put as much effort into the contract and ensure that there's a time for you to review the contract, for the other party to review the contract. You want to document that you've had these considerations and any concerns have been addressed in that contract. And by appending that log of records to that contract, you have a greater chance of proving in a court, if anything does happen, that it is not a standard form contract, which I found, well, these are not concepts that I deal with as a software engineer and somebody who's worked in data in the past. It's just, you know, I've looked at my employment contracts and I've looked at the contract for buying a house and, you know, skimmed over that. My lawyer dealt with that at the time. And it's not something that I really thought of. And this course absolutely got my brain ticking. So I'm pulling out all these takeaways. And then one of the interesting exercises that we did is we drafted a contract. And I thought this was really valuable because in my mind, I had these things that these are important considerations. And by the time we went through the exercise, I was like, holy crap, there are all these things that we need to consider when writing a contract. And these aren't inherently legal things. These are more like, you know, these are what would a business need in a contract, and not just one party, what would both parties need to be satisfied? When is the other party going to be performant? What are the risks? I mean, there were so many case studies in this course, and I'd love to talk about them all because there were some really interesting case studies, but it was so eye-opening that, you know, learning about how contracts have gone wrong. I think one of the most interesting case studies that was raised when we were drafting a contract was the comma that costs $1 million Canadian. So you can actually Google that, right? Remember, Google the comma that costs $1 million Canadian. I will put a link in the show notes as well as the link to the course. None of this is sponsored, by the way. It's just something that I gained value from and I want to share with everyone listening to this today. But in that particular case, they had a contract and it was, I believe, as I recall, it was some sort of shipping and freight contract, and there was a comma, and basically there was an additional comma, and rather than freight rebates, it was freight comma rebates. Basically, it was just an extra category that, you know, one party could consider when calculating their profit, or I can't remember the specifics, but a single comma had a financial impact on a deal of $1 million. So there would have been, I guess, a very pissed off client and a very pissed, maybe embarrassed legal team involved there. So it's extremely, you know, it's such an important thing when drafting a contract. I think, you know, with this particular contract, one of the important things that was raised was in this contract, rather than having written everything out in a paragraph with commas, for these, I guess, items that could be used when calculating an average selling price, they should have just had bullet points instead of commas, right? So it would have been much clearer to anybody reading this contract what they meant, and it would have absolutely minimized that mistake. So there would have been one very unhappy party in that, you know, the comma that cost $1 million case. So overall, like, what did I get out of that 8 hours? It's just my creative juices were flowing. I was learning something that is in a completely separate domain to what I normally do. And that's such a valuable thing. I think learning skills that are abstract will absolutely take you far in life. There is a concept out there called skill stacking. I will address it in another podcast. But when you kind of combine these abstract skills, you can transform yourself into a very unique individual in the sense that you can link areas which may not have inherently been linked before by other people, and they may not have been linked well. Now, question 3. This is the big one everyone asks me. can't you learn the basics of contract law for free? And why on earth did you not do that? Okay, so I spent $1,276 on this contracts law course. And realistically, yeah, I can go online. And in fact, I did go online in preparation for this podcast. I read over the course notes I recorded. Somebody from work also gave me a YouTube video to how to draft a contract. And I remember watching that. It was a 1 hour YouTube video. And I went to a few legal websites to brush up a few concepts. And yeah, absolutely, I could have learned it for free. But here's my question to everyone listening to this today. When you have had an abstract topic idea, how many times have you gone and learned it for free? There is so much free information on the internet and people do not take advantage of that. But, you know, of course, there are people who do take advantage of free information and it's great. But how many times are you going to learn as much as you can about contract law in the span of 8 hours? So the number one reason that I paid for this course is it's time bound. My job is not to become a lawyer, but I do want to equip myself with some basic knowledge about contracts. As I said, it's going to affect my marriage, my employment contracts, my future business opportunities, deals and partnerships. So it's important that I understand it. So I learned as much as I could about this domain area in a time bound. Keep that word in mind. Two words, time bound, right? I boxed an 8 hour segment one day where I would just learn about contract law. And that's a beautiful thing, because rather than trying to learn bits and pieces of contract law over, I guess, many weeks, many months, I did it in 8 hours. The next thing that I paid for, and this is actually one of my arguments for paying for certain resources, I think even with learning programming, I often have a few recommendations. I say, hey, you can learn it for free. Here's some free resources. But if you have $200, I recommend people go use something like Codecademy when they're starting off. Even though all the information on Codecademy is, again, it's free. But the reason you pay for it is not necessarily for the information. You're paying for the curation. You're paying for the curation of that information. And to put that into simpler terms, you're paying for somebody to pick and choose what is appropriate for you to learn at your level. And having somebody like Tony Dean, a senior litigator at Clayton Utz, decide what was going to be taught to me, absolutely incredible. And on top of that, he's a highly engaging man, thoroughly enjoyed how he presented the course, how he questioned us. I think I almost felt as if I was on a crossbench at times answering questions to him, because he did not like wishy-washy answers to the hypotheticals that were being raised. So it was definitely extremely enjoyable. And I guess the third reason why I paid for this course rather than learning it online is I'm finding now, especially with high ticket cost items, you're gaining access to people with a similar mentality to what you have. In that course, I'm gaining exposure and access to people who, value getting education in a particular time frame. They value getting education from particular experts where they can interact in person. And those are kind of the people that I want to surround myself with. So rather than learning this, so in addition to the knowledge gained, I'm also gaining access to people, their time, their attention. That's another part of the value proposition that I got out of it. Now on to question four. Does this mean you won't hire a lawyer to review your contracts in the future? And if you do decide to hire a lawyer, then what was the benefit for you in doing this course? So I'm, of course, going to hire lawyers. When I was going through a property purchase, I had my property lawyer go through the contracts and go through the strata. Now, I, of course, read that and I, you know, engaged with him on stuff that I read, and we had a discussion, and my property lawyer was great because he took the time to explain things to me. But absolutely, I'm going to hire a lawyer. I'm not going to not hire a lawyer. But the way I see it, and the way I see learning subjects outside your kind of core expertise, right? So you might be an interior designer, you might be a cleaner, you might be bagging groceries at this stage in your life. But when you learn things that are outside your core domain of competency, what I find is, so let's take the guy who taught this course to me, the senior litigator at Clayton Arts, his name was Tony. So Tony, I would say, is an absolute expert in his field. So he's working for a prestigious law firm. He's a senior litigator. He goes to court all the time to deal with contract fuck-ups. He's an expert at his game, and let's just use him as the benchmark. Let's say he represents 100% of the domain knowledge of contracts law, which is probably, I'm sure he's a very humble guy and he'd say, no, there's these other experts, but for the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to benchmark him as 100%. Now, when I entered that room that morning to attend this course, my knowledge was zero. When I left this course, maybe a good description of the knowledge that I have or have gained since attending that course would be a law student who attended a contracts law course and then, I guess, never worked in that field. Contracts, that is. They might have worked in a different field of law, or they might not have worked in law at all. And if they sat that course and they, you know, 10 years went on and they never really thought about contract law, right? So the knowledge eroded. I would describe the knowledge I gained equivalent to a lawyer who did not utilize contract law knowledge for 10 years. And people think, well, that's pathetic. Yeah, no wonder you're going to hire a lawyer. But here's how I see it. If that represents something like, you know, 1 to 5% of that area of knowledge, which is, realistically speaking, useless in a professional sense if you want to become a practicing lawyer, and if you wanted to be very good at contract law. But for me, by understanding 1 to 5% of a domain area, if I compare the probability of me knowing nothing and one day having to, I might be in a position where I need to hire a lawyer or hire a legal team. And if I know nothing about contracts, I'm flying blind. If I have a 1 to 5% understanding of the core aspects of contract law, my ability to pick the right team, you know, my probability of success has increased, guess what? More than 1 to 5%. Because my chance of getting, I guess, misled by a charlatan drops significantly because I at least have a base understanding of that domain area, even if it is only 1 to 5%. And that is incredibly valuable. The second benefit is, again, I mentioned skill stacking previously, and I will do an episode on this in 2023. But when I went into work a few days later for my normal job, and again, I'm a software engineer, but I work at a company where there are lots of lawyers, and we just happened to be drafting our general terms. In general terms, it's kind of a standard contract that we send out to that we send out to our clients, and that this is a base contract. And they put this up, they let everyone in the company read it. And I was able to read it, and I was able to have a very productive discussion with the lawyer who drafted this. And I was able to ask all these questions that I, well, A, they typically wouldn't expect a software engineer to have asked of them, but I was also able to ask questions, and they were like, well, that's really fascinating that you brought that up, because the legal team that we were working with when we were drafting this also raised that exact point. Because I remember raising a point about some changes in legislation that was brought up in the course with the dismissal of unfair terms that can apply to small business contracts now. So a small business, if it's, I think, less than 20 people, there's some other, you know, caveats there, then particular terms can get thrown out. And my question was, if we ever pursue, I guess, smaller companies as clients, how does that affect us? And I was able to have a very productive discussion about that particular, very obscure element of the law. And for me, that's a benefit there because I can engage in cross-functional dialogue. I can speak somebody else's language. I can engage with them. I can make them feel valued because now they're not just a lawyer in a software company where no one cares about what they do, but I can show love, appreciation, and respect for their domain area. Again, my level of knowledge is only 1 to 5%, and even that's probably overstating it. But the important thing, it's greater than zero by doing this course. So those are that's really the benefit that I got out of it, even though I'm still going to hire lawyers in the future. It just lets me do a better job. And look, this one is, I guess, quite irrelevant to this course, but it is something that I did get asked. How did you get your company to pay for it? Well, no, my company did not pay for this course. No company in their right mind is going to pay a software engineer to attend a contracts course for non-lawyers, maybe with the exception that if they were developing some sort of legal software for contracts. And the incredible part that I find about this question is, even in that course, I would categorize the people attending that course into two buckets. There are the people who paid for the course themselves, like me, and there are the people whose companies paid for it. And in some instances, the people whose companies paid for it, they didn't inherently value what they were getting because they got it for free. But it's not the point. You can get your company to pay for things. In fact, we have a professional development budget at the work, and I will definitely be looking to utilize that to attain certain certifications and learn a few new skills in the new year. But my point is, don't, when you're thinking about your own self-development, don't be so passive where you're only going to do things if your company pays for it. You are more than your company. Do not wait for somebody in HR or somebody in the management chain to decide what is good for you or what is not good for you. If you want to learn a course and expand your skill set, just fucking do it. Just fucking do it. Pay for it. Don't complain. Don't come and tell me that, oh, my company won't pay for it. Go pay for it yourself. It will pay dividends, especially if you just like me, even though I like this podcast has literally been how this course has paid dividends for me. And it's just, yeah, it's a mentality that I think needs to be thrown out the window. It's great if your company pays for things, but do not rely on your company to decide your development. And yeah, so if I was going to sum up this course, absolutely loved it. Was it worth the $1,276 that I paid for it, plus one day of annual leave, which is important, right? I literally spent a day of my holidays attending this course. Absolutely. It was absolutely worth it. Even based on the short-term gains that I have gained, even that conversation that I had with that lawyer at work, that to me was worth more than the money that I paid for that. So it's already paying dividends. And I know that in the future, I will be getting into contracts galore and I feel so much more prepared. I feel so much more prepared. And I think, yeah, it is absolutely worth it. So I'll put more details about the particular course. Again, not sponsored. I'm just sharing what I found useful. By no means is this an advert to go and do this particular course, but you might just be interested in doing it. And if you are, it'll be in the show notes. And as always, I'm gonna leave it there and I wish you great success with all your endeavors. You've just made it through another episode of Monologues by Hasse. It brings me great pleasure to know that you made it to the end. To listen to more episodes, subscribe on your favorite podcast app or visit monologuesbyhasse.com. Thanks for swinging by.